Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. This debut of the Jeff Poor Show. Going to be a fun journey. Hopefully you'll stay with us. Very appreciative of the listeners and Sean Sullivan, who is chomping on a Whopper or something right now. As this kind of starts to unfold. But thank you for being with us. Joining us now in studio, good friend of mine. We go way back many, many years. Now he is in the legislature. State Representative Matt Simpson is with us. Representative, how are you?
I'm good. Glad to be here. I've been a guest on your show a number of times from when you were in Huntsville, and I'm sure the people in Huntsville are like, what is a state representative from Daphne doing on the radio in Huntsville? So it's glad to have you local and in the area.
Well, and then they would say that with a lot of, like, why is there a state representative from Dothan on or whatever? It just was that kind of show, but we're going to try to continue in that vein, but you were always gracious to come on and talk about stuff. I guess for this listening audience, so we haven't talked about this, but we'll hit it again, the prisons, that DOJ report that came out week before, or I guess it was week before last, and it highlighted some of just the stuff that seems like you put it, lack of institutional control. When you talk about the NCAA, we know that is those of us in Alabama are familiar with the NCAA. When you hear that, the bad things are coming. But that's what it seemed like to me, that, you know, the while we know that the Department of Justice is really looking down at Alabama and the Department of Corrections, there's these unresolved issues going on with the staffing and with the conditions and whatnot.
You're right. That report showed absolute just lack of institutional control. I've used that phrase, and I was to Alabama when Dubose was the coach, so I'm well aware of that phrase. You know, when you have, like in Alabama, they had rogue boosters operate in a certain manner, and they firm them and they say, are these something that is looked down upon by the institution, or is this something that's allowed? And you look at what's happened with these prison guards, and that report is 28 pages, and in that report is multiple instances, not just of the actions, but of what occurred following the actions of those prison guards. You know, they're in a rough environment, number one. They're underpaid. They're understaffed. They're in a stressful situation where they're outnumbered tremendously by the inmates, so they're kind of trying to help the best they can. But the situation that the DOJ brought up, and the problem was, the Alabama Department of Corrections was investigating themselves. They weren't turning over the results of their investigation over the DAs or any local authorities. They were able to sweep some instances under the rug, and the DOJ found that there was instances and there was a culture. And this was the problem. It was a culture of allowing these excessive force uses to be unreported or underreported and nothing done on them. And that's a problem within DOJ. If you're going to say, hey, I'm going to take this all on our own, I'm going to investigate this ourselves, we're going to have our own unit set up, and we're going to check and make sure that we're doing the right thing. Well, the problem is, if you don't have those outside eyes looking in, if you don't have some other force that can look in and say, hey, this is a problem, when everything hits the fan, you're going to have to answer for that on your own. And that's the problem. And that's the answer, the issue with the leadership that they have there. They set up that culture to where it did not have to be reported, where these officers could get away with doing these things, where this culture of allowing officers to have this excessive force without reporting, without suspending them, even if they were disciplined, minimal suspensions. You know, it's one of those things of you've gotten so far away from what the normal and acceptance would be for how you should go, how you should run things. It's time to put new eyes on this. It's time to put some new ears to kind of say, hey, this is not acceptable anymore. We're not going to allow this to happen and on my watch. And I think new leadership in the Department of Corrections is needed.
So, yeah, Jeff Dunn, the commissioner of the Alabama Department of Corrections, you think it's time for him to go?
Yeah, he was appointed in 2015. He's been given a rough shot. You know, it's a difficult situation for the prisons in Alabama. I will tell you that it is a rough hand to be dealt with what he's got. We need to fund the prisons. We need to build more prisons. We need to pay for more staff. There's a lot that we need to do to make the prisons better. But that's the job you took. That's the job you accepted. Everything in this report happened on your watch. And you have to answer for what happened on your watch. And he has not answered for what happened on his watch. My question is, what does a bad job look like? You know, if you're saying
this is good, what is point B on the continuum? Right. You know, is that is that well, why, you know, I don't even know where to start with that. I guess it could be, you could have prison riots and things like that. It could deteriorate in such a direction. But this, to me, the Eighth Amendment stuff and just the highlighting of that is not a good light for Alabama.
And on top of that, Jeff, we had a report come out in April of 2019, and the most of that report talked about inmate-on-inmate violence, you know, the treatment of the inmates within, you know, their mental health safety, their safety from other things like that. That report comes out in April of 2019. This report comes out in July of 2020, where it's just about officer excessive force, officer on inmate violence. And that is all about the July report, July 2020 report, is all about officer inmate violence. The problem is, you have this report that comes out in April. You know the DOJ is looking at you. You know the spotlight's on. You know the light is being shined, and they're coming around looking at you. A lot of these instances happened after April of 2019 with the officer involved. So if you know DOJ's there,
why aren't you straightening up your act and doing better? Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
How can this happen after the investigation's there? How do you not have your people sit around and say, "Look, we got to do something. We can't continue to do this." Some of the stuff that happened, Jeff, they had an officer who beat a guy, and was, as he was beating him, was sitting there telling him, "I am the Reaper of Death, and you will say my name." And nurses are sitting there saying, "We're trying to get this guy to stop." There are reports of nurses saying, "These guys come in, we've seen the officer hit them, we've seen the force being used, and there's no reports of physical force being used on this." It's not acceptable. We can't allow it. I am as law and order and as pro-law enforcement as you possibly can be. I've got 12 years as a prosecutor as my career. This is what I believe in. What are your stance in prisons? I believe we should have more of them. But I believe that when we do send somebody off to prison, they are not to be treated as less than individuals. You know, they have the right to be safe in where they are, to the extent of not to be handcuffed and beaten, not to be punched in the face because you stick your tongue out at an officer and nothing happens. It's one of those things of, you have to rehabilitate these guys and try to get them out so you don't have the recidivism. 95% of everybody that walks into a prison doors gets out. Not everybody's there for life or life without possibility of parole or for the death sentences. So if you just go there and you treat them in this manner, and you allow them to be treated by other inmates in this manner, you allow them to be treated by officers in this manner, what do you expect when people get out of prison? How do you expect them to act? We've lost our way in the Alabama Department of Corrections and the prison system where we need to go. Let's get back on track. Let's go the direction we need to go in.
How close do you think we are really from a receivership or some kind of intervention from the federal government?
You know, I hope not close. You know, they've worked really hard. I talked with Attorney General Steve Marshall, and he's talked about some of the success they've done. When you bring up Tutwiler, you know, the Department of Justice came in and said, you have to work on these women's prisons, you have to work on this, and now Tutwiler has transformed and become one of the model prisons for women prisoners that you have. We've shown an effort to be willing to work with the DOJ and say, hey, listen, we'll listen to you, we'll listen to some of your concerns. What can we do to make this better? How can we work to make this better? I think that's a big deal to show them, come with us and work with us. I think if we also want to send the message of, we hear you, we get your message, we've got to give them something too and say, hey, we no longer have that person that was in charge when all this happened. That person is no longer in charge, and we're looking at it with fresh eyes.
It shows you're making some reforms and some measures, because it seems to me all 2018 talked about, but we couldn't do it because that was an election year. Okay, fair enough. 2019 rolls around. Well, we don't have time in this general session. We'll call a special session later in the year. And that never happens. Sean and I were sitting there. Del Marsh, the Senate pro tem, says, hey, yeah, we're going to do a special session in the fall of 2019. Never happens. So we're waiting on sentencing commissions and all these blue ribbon panels to give us stuff. It just seems like always this is getting put off. And then COVID-19, at some point, you can only kick that can down the road so far before you're going to have to, something's going to have to happen, or it's that worst case scenario, right?
That's the fear. That is the concern when they come in with this conservatorship or consent decree or whatever, how it comes through. You know, we budgeted in 2019, in the 2019 budget, we budgeted a substantial increase to the Department of Corrections for them to hire more officers, to hire more guards. They've used some of that money. They haven't used all that money. And that's a problem. That's a point of contention with the legislature. It's like, hey, if we're going to budget you for $40 million, how about you spend that $40 million on an increase in stuff rather than just hold it and sit there? You know, the governor has stressed, and she's made a point, In 2017, they tried to push this prison to come through the legislature. The legislative session, you know, it got off track when people start fighting about where are the prisons going to go.
Right, because it's an economic engine for some of these local areas.
Completely. And you have some areas that are going to fight tooth and nail to make sure that if they have a prison, they keep that prison, or other areas are going to fight to try to get a prison. That side of the politics side of it gets ugly and it gets messy, and that can cause a delay. I don't like that the governor is going forward and said, I'm going to do this on my way. I'm going to do it. I'm not going to tell you guys about it. You'll find out about it when we tell everybody else in the press. That's how you'll find out about it as a legislature. I'm not a fan of that method. I'd like prefer to work to somebody together where we can come together and work and collaborate on issues together and not just have one person make these decisions. But I see her point. It's tough. Right. It's tough to make that argument and say, no, let's work together, when she can turn around and say, we just worked together in 2017 and it didn't work. We do have a new legislature since 2017. We have not worked on it since this legislature came in. We had a turnover of about a third of new members that have come in 2018. So why not let's try and see what we can come up with.
Well, Matt, the thing that always gets me, whenever this topic comes up, and people on the left will say, well, Republicans are shy about, you know, prisons. It's not part of their orthodoxy. It's not part of, you know, their ideology, that the spending money on prisons is not where, you know, that's not a traditional Republican thing. And that's why we never address it. But I would argue that most of us, especially at a time like this, when law and order seems to be what the Republican electorate is yearning for, that prisons is a component of that, and instinctively they would recognize, well, you want, like you were saying, I'm for more prisons. That is a component of law and order. And I don't know, this whole idea that it's just a Republican problem is mythology.
I agree with you. There's no way that public safety is not a Republican principle. You know, public safety and infrastructure, that's two of the things we pride ourselves on as Republicans, to come in and say, this is what we're going to focus on. Part of public safety is to make sure that if someone commits a crime and they need to be taken out of society for a little while, we have a place to put them. We have a place to say, we're not just going to leave you on the streets. We're not going to let you continue to commit crimes and continue to not be punished for it. We're just going to put you on, I guess, double secret probation this time, and you really don't want to mess up this time, even if it's your third, fourth, or fifth felony. We're not going to send you away because we don't have a place to send you. The concern is what happens when the prisons come in and we haven't addressed it. We haven't paid with the money we need to pay. We haven't gotten the guards we need to pay. We don't have the structures we need. What happens when they come in and they say, okay, great, now all these people are going to walk on the home. You have, let's say you have 12,000 beds, you can only keep 12,000 inmates. Everybody else, you got to go. Anything 12,001 has to go.
Right.
And there's a lot of people. That's a problem. That's something we need to address. It's happened in California. This isn't something that's never happened before. This is something that has been done by the federal government before. California has been shook by what happened. You know, they're still recovering from the efforts that made when they released a handful, you know, not a handful, just everybody. They just said, here, this group, you're going to go home. And
They had no real answer for that. To put people out on the streets and not have, you know, a place to go in some cases, or, you know, a job or any of that, that creates bigger societal problems. And that would be my concern, that you look at the California experience. You don't want that happening in Alabama.
You're exactly right. And we need to do what we can to make sure. If you look at the Department of Justice reports, the two reports that I referenced, the April 2019 report and the July 2020 report, not one of those reports mentions sentencing reform. Not one. It's not mentioned. It's not discussed. It's not talked about. It's talked about, how do you treat the prisoners? How do you maintain where the prisoners are located? How do you keep them not in crumbling facilities? How do you make sure, how do you work on their mental health? How do you help them? You know, and part of that is coming in and saying, okay, look, we're going to teach you a trade. When you get out of prison, you're going to have a marketable skill that you can do to try to make yourself a productive member of society. There's efforts being made within the legislature to try to get those bills passed, try to get funding for those programs, to try to help and make sure that, look, okay, you messed up. It doesn't mean you have to stay in that cycle for your entire life. You can get out, you can come in, and you can learn something. We've got people down here, we're begging to try to find the qualified jobs. You know, we've got so many jobs down here that people people aren't coming down here. Companies don't come to Mobile and Baldwin County because they can't find the workforce to fill it.
It's the workforce that doesn't have the skills you need to fill some of those jobs, and that hurts your economic development.
Exactly. So if we can come up and say, hey, you know what? We can make a welder. We can make somebody here. We can get somebody out of prison to come in and give you an opportunity. That inmate say, you know what? You have a chance. You have a shot. Once you get out, you have a chance to do something better with yourself, and that's something we need to focus on.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll be right back with State Representative Matt Simpson. This is the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5.
They begin to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. We look down a river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton fields.
Hear Richard Best picking on that red guitar. So gather round, now gather round, chill and be down. We're just getting down, chill and get loud.
And welcome back to the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5. This debut of the Jeff Porsche Show, I've made it to the final segment. It's kind of like the home stretch. Somehow, I have not fallen completely on my face. Just a few maybe brushes with falling on my face. But happy to be here. Happy that you're listening. We're going to do more. This is kind of the show. Once we work out the kinks, this will be what you get on a daily basis between 9 a.m. and noon. Looking very forward to it. Very honored to be to have you as listeners. And thanks to Sean Sullivan for making me, giving me this opportunity to talk to this audience. Still with us, by the way, State Representative Matt Simpson. Representative Simpson, the schools, you know, that's the new, I guess, the new hot button right now. Should schools start up? Is it safe to do schooling? Or is this virtual schooling even is it even going to work?
You know, I cannot take my hat off enough and commend Superintendent Eddie Tyler for the job he's done on Baldwin County Schools. What they've done and what they've said, they've notified the public and given all the information out there and said, look, if you want your kid to come to school, schools will be available, and this is how we're going to do it. If you do not want your kid to come to school, you have the opportunity for distance learning, for virtual school, and this is how you go about that track. And you let the parents make the decision. You know, my kids love being home, and they're, you know, I consider them smart kids. Our kids struggled in the fourth quarter last year. You know, I've got a daughter that's going into second grade. The perception is, I can't get her to learn on a computer screen. She's not to that level yet where she can watch a virtual and keep her attention and keep her focus on what goes on there. And there is no right answer to this question. I will tell you, every family needs to do what's best for their own family. Make your own choice, make your own decisions, and say, you know what, for my family, it's best if we do distance learning. And that's fine. That is great. That is your option, and that is your choice that the Baldwin County Schools have allowed you to do. But if you're like me and you're like, we have found out, my wife and I have found out, we are not homeschool parents, and we just can't do it. That is not a gift that we've been
given.
You
don't have the means to hire a tutor or a teacher to come in. I mean, it seems like if this is around to stay, if this is the new normal for a while with COVID-19, my worry is this is going to turn into like a feudal system where the haves can hire teachers and have their own education system, and then the have-nots, well, they're doing this thing on a computer screen that may or may not work, but they're not getting the most bang for their buck. I mean, there will be some real societal implications here unless we could figure out a workaround or a fix to this.
I agree with you. You know, I understand Baldwin and Mobile are different. I'm blessed that my district covers both Baldwin and Mobile County. I understand the school system in Mobile made a different decision, and that's the decision that their superintendent made. I trust that they've done the best with the information that they've had to try to make the best decisions they've had. However, the appearance of a Mobile County school system to say, we're going to push back our start date to September the 1st, and we're going to go 9 weeks, and 9 weeks we'll make the decision on what we're going to do from there. Well, 9 weeks from September the 1st is presidential election day. And even if you, I'm not saying conspiracy theories in here, I'm not throwing that stuff around, but I'm saying just the appearance of saying
right.
things may be better on election day, so we're going to figure out what can happen and schools will come back. You've got to have some type of mind to be able to say, you know what, we're not going to say, let's just wait till after the presidential election to come back to school. Somebody has to be there on the inside to say, this looks bad. Because there's the conspiracy theories that you go around, you know, where you hear about all these things that go on. It's you don't want to feed that trolling mechanism where somebody can say, oh, look what they did. The schools just said it'll be what happens after presidential election day. So it's, you know, it's just one of the things that the public perception is not great on that.
And real quick, we just got a minute or two here left. You were in Trussville for an Algonquin meeting. What is the vibe among Republicans in Alabama when you're talking to them up there about the presidential election?
You know, everybody's on board. This is a super important election for our lifetime as we come in to make sure that we protect not only the president, the White House. We need to make sure that we have the Senate. We need to get, you know, everybody rallied around Senator, hopefully future Senator Tuberville, as he came in and spoke to us. Those numbers are important as we're on that fine line of 50, 51, 52. How far are we going to have? Is it going to go Republican? Is it going to go Democrat? The future of the country is at stake with what we're looking at. You have some Supreme Court justices that are going out. So it's not just a, yes, we support the president. It's a, we support down ballot races as well.
Hey, we got to leave it there. Matt Simpson, thank you. This has been the Jump Force Show on FM Talk 106.5.